Dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster drew ire on the internet earlier this week because of the inclusion of the word irregardless in its Words of the Week newsletter. Explained that despite the objections of many people around the internet, irregardless is a word and deserves to be in the dictionary. In fact, has been in the dictionary for decades. I remember decades ago on this program debating whether irregardless and other words like it that were considered to be non-words or poor grammar ended up being included in the dictionary. Joining us to talk about how words like irregardless end up becoming official in the dictionary is editor-at-large for Merriam-Webster, Peter Sokolowski. Thank you so much, Peter, for joining us. We appreciate it.
It's great to be here.
So let's talk about the history of irregardless, because it's one of those words that really, you know, sticks in some people's craw. They really get upset about this. But how long has this word been debated as to whether it's real?
Oh, I'm sure for as long as the word has existed, we date the word to the late 1700s in its use. It was first added to one of our print dictionaries in 1934.
Wow. What are some other examples of some of these words that were incorrect, but that ended up because of a frequent usage being codified?
Oh, sure. Well, this happens kind of all the time. It's more frequent to have it happen with a meaning of a word, you know, with a drift of a word's meaning. And sometimes this happens very subtly and very slowly. A word like literally, for example, which is often used as a kind of emphatic intensifier. I literally died laughing in a meaning which obviously means the opposite of its original meaning, which means by the letter or specifically or exactly. And so that's what we call that semantic drift. Semantic bleaching is really the term for that. And what I mean by that is if I said to you, I literally died laughing, the important words in that sentence that carry meaning are the words died and laughing. literally just makes them more intense. And that what that means is that literally is actually carrying very little weight of meaning in that particular expression. I died laughing all by itself, you would understand as hyperbole or humor. And so if I add the literally, then it actually only adds emphasis. It only adds an intensity to that statement. And that's what we call semantic bleaching. In other words, in that adverbial position, the word literally actually means less than it might in another place where it was taken more, you might say, literally.
So you just sort of give up, it sounds like, Peter. You're just saying, yeah, it's an incorrect usage, but it's so frequently used literally to mean an emphasis instead of literal, that you then incorporate it as an acceptable use.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, the term incorrect is not what we would say, because first of all, literally is a good example. Like irregardless, it really kind of sticks out as an example that it seems to be contrary to the logic of the language. But the fact is, this is exactly what we do when we use words like, I don't know, like really, for example. If I were to say that was a really brave act, then I would be using it in its, you know, dictionary definition. But if I said the food isn't really good, then the fact is the really there is actually just, again, intensifying and therefore not carrying lots of meaning. So we do this with words like awful and awesome. The word very, which etymologically, very is the French word vrai, which means true or truth. So when I say something like, for example, the food isn't very good, that is kind of reducing the what we call lexical intensity. The intensity of that word is being shifted to another word, and that's where you lose meaning. And then what we do with the dictionary is we add a new definition. In the case of literally, there are two definitions. The first one, the more traditional one, the older one, and then this new one, which simply means, which actually kind of means figuratively, almost its opposite.
but
in the case of irregardless, though, I mean, we clearly label that as a non-standard usage that we do not recommend. If you care about language and you care about the way you are perceived through your language, then you will not use that word. And we make that crystal clear at the entry.
Well, does it, though, weaken the traditional use of literally? So if you were describing, I was literally burning up because, you know, you dropped something onto flammable materials and your pant leg caught fire, versus, you know, you were dealing with a fever. Does it diminish the ability to use the term in its traditional sense?
It can. It can. I mean, that's a really good question. And I think that is the gray area here, because I think, first of all, hyperbole should be used carefully, because not everyone who is listening or reading your words will understand the hyperbole. So I think that is a very important point also. I think also, though, it's important to remember that, you know, that polysemy, what we call polysemy, the multiple meanings of a single word, is incredibly complex and also incredibly permanent for us. So, for example, if I were to use the word vitriol or with you, saying something like political vitriol, you would understand it to mean angry political speech. But if I were to say he threw vitriol at the painting, that would refer to its other meaning, the hydrochloric acid. And that's an interesting case, because it originally meant liquid that burns, and then figuratively it means words that burn. But the point is, because of the context, it's really unlikely that you'll mistake the one for the other.
We're talking with Peter Sokolowski, who is editor-at-large for Merriam-Webster. We're already getting some great examples of these semantic shifts, these drifts that occur in the usage of words. Jeffrey in Beverly Hills says, the word trope is being used lately as a convention of cliché when the dictionary standard for the word is a literary or rhetorical device for irony. Is that a good example of this semantic drift, Peter?
Oh, absolutely. I do think. In fact, we've added a subsense to trope. So, originally, a word or expression used in a figurative sense. We've also added a common or overused theme or device, which is a synonym of the word cliche, really. You know, horror movie tropes, for example. And so, your listener has noticed a drift. And here's the thing: we tend to dislike the changes in language that we notice, you know, and because we have a sense of permanency to words, especially from our school days, for example. But your listener absolutely noticed something that we have noticed as well.
Julie in the Valley says, I literally have smoke coming out of my ears. Let's hope not, Julie. We're at 866-893-KPCC. We're talking about semantic drift, about changes in the usage of words, which ones you're okay with, which ones particularly bother you. We're so glad to have with us from Merriam-Webster, editor-at-large, Peter Sokolowski, 866-893-KPCC. The Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Norma wondering if misunderestimate is a word yet. Probably not, but it should be. It's one of those great made-up words.
Yeah, but, you know, and that's an interesting point, because this addition of a syllable sometimes confers a kind of seriousness to a word. And in that case, it obviously resulted in us laughing, you know,
yeah.
So it didn't work. However, there is a kind of intensifying effect to some words. For example, we have the word most and we have the word utmost. You know, we have superannuated or extraordinary. And I think to some extent, irregardless is some kind of emphatic addition. I do think it's a double negative. It's illogical. You know, it's non-standard. It's not something we should use. But I can almost squint and see the rationale, much like misunderestimated. Someone who's trying to create a very serious sounding word ends up doing the opposite.
866-893-KPCC. I don't know whether this falls into, because it's a phrase, it's not a word, but people very frequently now, you hear them say, I could care less, which of course they don't literally mean. They mean they couldn't care less, because why would they be telling us if they could care less? But, you know, something like that. It's another example of that sort of drift where a person is saying the opposite of what they intend to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's a funny one, and that's been going on for a long time. And again, people who are careful about their language, in particular people who write professionally, write for academic purposes, or who are copy editors, bless them all, they will catch those as logic errors in addition to errors of grammar. I wouldn't say that these are necessarily grammar errors that we're talking about. These are essentially logical or semantic errors more than grammatical errors. But the fact is, you know, sometimes we're speaking quickly, we don't think, and that's how those kinds of clippings happen, I think. And of course, nobody really misunderstands you. If someone were to say, well, you know, he can borrow the car tomorrow, I could care less, I think we'd all understand exactly what was meant. And that's really the most important function of language.
All right, 866-893-KPCC. Joaquin in Highland Park, you're on Air Talk.
Hi, I'm an ESL teacher, and I teach English mostly to international students. And I always try to teach my students to use the language that people use, you know, in their day-to-day life. And I remind them that language, I think, first exists between people and kind of second in books and in grammar books. And I guess I just try to remind my students that language doesn't really belong to any one person, and that it's just constantly changing. And it's like people 100 years ago listen to the way we talk now, they'd probably be appalled. And, you know, especially with the conversations about like race happening right now, like I think it's important to realize that, you know, a small group of people necessarily shouldn't have all the say in, you know, what is language. And, you know, it can be kind of problematic saying that, you know, the way one person talks and the one way like a certain group of people use language is appropriate, but the way like another group.
And yet, Joaquin, we need some degree of agreement, because otherwise there's a lack of clarity in conversation. So I think the point you make is an excellent one. The way that people really use language, really, really talk, is essential, particularly for your students learning English, to understand that. But at the same time, if it's so squishy that we don't understand the terms that we're using, that too can be a problem, Peter. I mean, that's why you have a job, right, is to clarify that stuff.
Well, absolutely. First of all, you know, I'm sure Joaquin is a great teacher, because he just expressed some of the best philosophy of language that you can possibly have as an educator. So I thank you on behalf of your students. And also, you know, there is a really important place for plain language, which I think is what he was getting at also, for the way that we actually use words. You know, one of my predecessors at Merriam-Webster, the editor in the 1950s and 60s, he used to say, tell the truth about words. That's our job. And so I do think that, to get to your point, Larry, I think the dictionary is the greatest evidence of human consensus that we have. In other words, thousands of syllables, of sounds, of groupings of sounds used for millions of potential groupings of sounds used for thousands of years, but all of us agree that they mean something, that they mean the same thing, or close enough to the same thing that we can communicate. So the dictionary has this paradox, which is, on the one hand, it's calling balls and strikes. It's saying you're right or you're wrong about spelling, about meaning, that kind of thing. On the other hand, it reflects the actual usage of the people who use the language, who own the language, who determine its development, its change, and its life. And so that's our descriptive mission, which is to tell the truth about words, how they are really used. And then a teacher like Joaquin can bring that to their students and demonstrate it. You know, I love, it's funny, I just gave a lecture for ESL purposes to a group of teachers in Mexico via Zoom, which is a great experience and a new one for me. And it still works, more or less. I really love our dictionary for non-native speakers. It's at learnersdictionary.com. And I love it because it's written in a plain language. So the definitions are there to be understandable for everybody. And I think that it's not just learners of English who need that. It's everybody.
Jose in the West Adams District said, people use the word ironically so often and incorrectly. I feel at this point it means whatever people want it to mean. Well, that's that lack of clarity I was talking about, Jose, because that too is an issue if we don't know what the other person is intending to say. Matt, in Pasadena, where do you see a drift in semantics?
My crusade lately has been against the misuse of the word nonplussed. And as an attorney, if my writing, if I'm, my word choice is going to cause any confusion whatsoever, I might as well just not use that word. And so I think this word slippage is really bad for the language.
Yeah, all right. I appreciate it, Matt. So nonplussed, an example. Is that one that, Peter, you've gotten into?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. And I, you know, you're totally correct about that. The fact is there are certain words that become skunked, you know, that are so frequently misunderstood, or you're not certain that your reader or your listener will understand, that you choose a different word. In the case of nonplussed, I will say that's a word that I sort of avoid, because that original meaning, which is perplexed, has been to some extent eclipsed by the meaning that's sort of unimpressed, or you know, not
yeah.
surprised. And we do include that second one as a definition in the dictionary, but we put a note that notes that it's increasingly common recently, but that it's often criticized for exactly the reason that your caller mentioned.
Bob in Palm Springs says, all of a sudden, every newscast calls everything fraught, which means filled up or overflowing, but they use it as a noun, totally inappropriate use of the word. You think fraught is misused, Peter?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know fraud as a noun, first of all. I don't know it. So, but as an adjective, I think it's possible that some hyperbole is taking place, that people are using a lot of hyperbolic language. The word unprecedented has been used, needless to say, an unprecedented number of times in these recent months for many really solid reasons. I mean, we are seeing events take place that we have never seen before. So some people ultimately, you know, the things that bother you with language tend to be the things that you notice, you know, that stick out.
Yeah.
And clearly these are two words like that. But they stick out, I would say, possibly for a pretty good reason, that people are using them more and we are noticing it.
Well, and also media is very imitative. So Bob was pointing out newscasts, and that's pretty common. A word, you know, from the past that's been revived recently is disgraced, where in news stories you'll have individuals described as disgraced so-and-so, former such-and-such. That's a word where you just didn't see that, disgraced. But it, once one news outlet starts using it, then others jump on that bandwagon. That becomes a popular term. Peter, a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. Look forward to talking with you again.
It's a treat to talk to you. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Peter Sokolowski is editor-at-large for Merriam-Webster. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, race and ethnicity in jury selection, what a new study out of Berkeley shows, and the criticism that study is also getting. We'll be back in just 90 seconds on Air Talk.